are listening to Omnis Protocol. I am Charles, also known as Omnis, and I'm here with the Doctor Strange of Marvel Crisis Protocol, one Pat Dunford. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me, Charles. It's really good to be back on the show. Really excited to do my second cast with you and talk about the Cabal.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, spoiler alert, this is Hail Hydra Part 2. And so we're doing a deep dive in each of the affiliations. And we have some really specific questions that we're going to try to tackle to help people look at either their favorite affiliation or one that they're potentially trying to play more, or maybe you're just trying to play against them. So, Pat, I think it's fair to say that Cabal is probably the faction that you play the most.
Oh, yeah, I love them. I cannot get enough of playing with Cabal. I think probably of all my games of NCP, and there's been a lot at this point, I've certainly lost track, probably half of them are with Cabal, and every time I'm not sure what to play, I always find myself gravitating back to Red Skull, MODOK. They're just such a blast.
Yeah, I mean, it is a really strong baseline, and I'm going to do some episodes specifically focused on some very powerful teams, and I would say of any of the affiliations, like, some of the pure power of Cabal, I think, is almost a little bit more apparent than it is with some of the other affiliations, where there's a bit more subtlety to it, but, like, you can recognize when you're playing it's a great Cabal team, you're like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah, they're really strong.
All right, so let's dive into our questions. The first, and kind of potentially most important, is examining the win condition of the affiliation. And this can be multiple win conditions, but what would you say is generally the primary route that Cabal is going to get an advantage on the table over its opponent?
So I think what you said about advantage, right, is really important, because I strongly believe that any team in the game can win through lots of different strategies. And it's certainly possible to have a flexible game plan and to adapt your strategy as the game progresses. But there's some things that Cabal are just inherently better at. So they're the things that I find myself winning with more frequently, and they're more often my number one game plan.
For sure.
Yeah. So those things, first up, power generation, right? Red Skull's leadership is phenomenal. I personally think it's the strongest leadership in the game by a significant amount. And it generates power. There's other leaderships that are comparable. Avengers saves you power. And then for a lot of the other teams, especially Wakanda and Asgard, their leaderships are costing them power, right? So generating power is huge. It gives your characters a lot more flexibility. It gives them a lot more options. And it can let you exploit certain crises in a really big way. And then on top of that, they're generally really good at dishing out damage. They have powerful affiliated characters that do very high damage, primarily Killmonger and MODOK, but also Crossbones and Zemo are no slouch in the three-point bracket for damage dealers. And they have other supporting abilities that help facilitate the output, right? They have the Dark Reign tactics card, which is a very strong affiliated card. Red Skull is an enabler for other characters, where he can place them forwards and let them more frequently make two attacks. And going back to his leadership, the leadership keys off damage, so it pays you off for having characters that consistently put out a lot of attacks that do reliable damage, and if possible, hit multiple targets.
Absolutely agree. So I think the kind of the moral of the story is, if you're going to be making attacks and you're going to be generating a lot of power, your primary win condition is getting advantage of dazing and KOing characters. Because just realistically, Cabal is better at that than anyone else.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think what it comes down to is they're more incentivized to make attacks on characters for their own benefit. Because they get a bigger benefit, right? They get more power in return. And that extra power then fuels them to make additional attacks. They can use more spenders. They can use more throws and similar powers. And so they are just making attacks more frequently and making more powerful attacks. And over the course of the game, that will add up to Daisy and KO and more characters.
Perfect. And I think I said this in the win conditions episode, but I personally felt like Cabal also plays very strongly into the extract side of the crisis. One, obviously, if you're a dazing and KOing affiliation, making people drop extracts is a thing that you're going to do. And obviously your power helps you interact with N as well. Like, as you just said, getting the power to like throw people to help them drop those extracts, or, you know, all of those things play into it. And they don't naturally have a lot of interaction with secures in the same way that some of the other affiliations do. So it has felt like to me, like, they're going to get that advantage via dazing and KOing characters, but then they also have a huge game in the extract side of things.
Yeah, I agree with that. Their output definitely helps them to deal with people carrying extracts. This is a bit of a generalization, but they tend to play a bit more of a range game. Their characters more often want to stay at arm's length. And they don't have that many characters who are very tough. And so as a result, they're just not quite as good as some other affiliations at getting stuck in and battling over secure objectives. That's not to say it can't be done. Of course it can be done. But I agree with you that that's not where their strength is. And their strength is targeting down characters and taking them out. I think it's worth mentioning at this point that even though we're talking about Daisy and KOing, I don't consider KOing the entire enemy team to be a viable path to victory, even with Cabal.
100% agreed. I've done it once ever, and that actually wasn't with Cabal, but it was a crazy game.
Yeah, I think it has to be a really unusual game for that to happen. And it's much more just about Daisy and KOing characters to deny activations so that you can get ahead on victory points.
100%. So kind of one sub question within this one. Do you generally feel like Cabal should be amplifying its, you know, dazing and KOing plan and its extract plan with its additional like unaffiliated slots? Or do you think that they should be bringing in characters? I say maybe Venom is a good, you know, potential topic here to have a little bit better ability to be in the middle fighting over secures and brings in that push and pull tech to kind of, I wouldn't say it's a flaw in Cabal, but it's just not a strength. And so maybe having that unaffiliated character to help with that area, or do you want to like overpower the murdering, I guess?
That's a great question, because I don't think you can go wrong in the decision. I think either way is a really good complement to the affiliation strengths, and it's just about the pros and cons of both. And perhaps you might also consider the opposing team composition when you're doing that, depending on your opponent's roster and how easily you think you can predict what they're going to take. The way that I see it is generally tougher characters do better in longer games, and I don't think Cabal is a long game team, because their power generation comes from dealing damage to the enemy. Daisy and KOing characters is great, but as we said, you're probably not going to KO the whole team. And there are repercussions for doing this, right? I'm getting power, but I'm giving you a lot of power as well. And so in general, I want to use those early Daisies and KOs to get slightly ahead and to get more victory points and then cement that lead and try to win around about turn 3 to 4. And having tougher characters can let me change that plan, which can be really helpful if I just think that plan's not going to work, right? If I think you're going to outrace me or you're going to punish me too much for my primary game plan.
No, that makes sense. It seems like both Red Skull and MODOK can often like survive to that round 3, round 4 part, but probably don't make it through round 5. Like, if Skull has used the Mastery of the Cube too many times, like, he's starting to get low. That MODOK 10 health with denying wilds, like, that keeps him alive for a while, but he just can't go on forever. So it makes sense that they don't want that game to be hitting turn 6, because Cabal can just start falling at a certain point.
I was just going to say, it's basically once MODOK gets dazed, that's your alarm bell to say you should be ending the game pretty soon.
Yeah.
Because
ASAP.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So the next topic is controlling priority. This was one of my very, very first episodes. I wanted to get people thinking about how does priority impact your specific team design? Do you want to be going second? Do you want to be going first? And if you don't have it, what can you potentially do to switch it to the way that you want it? So how does that impact Cabal in your mind?
I think of all of the affiliations, Cabal most wants to have priority. obviously there's always going to be exceptions on the table, right? Depending on the circumstances. But Cabal has strong ranged attackers. It has a lot of damage output. It's probably, on balance, the most fragile of the affiliations. It really wants to be going first and have always having that choice to activate a powerful attacker before they get taken out themselves. Controlling activation lets them stay ahead in the game that they want to play, which is dazing and KOing enemy characters.
Makes sense to me. So it seems like, I mean, to a certain extent, I think most affiliations would probably be fine going second on the first round. And then second round on is where people really are cemented in kind of one side or the other. And it seems like for Cabal, because sometimes you're not always going to get priority, right? And so you have to think about that in your team composition, where if you build a 5-character team and your opponent builds a 5-character team, it may be very difficult for you to ever get priority again. And so that starts brings into questions like things like Follow Me and like Corvus Glaive and Proxima. How important do you think it is for Cabal to have ways in to generate a double activation to change that priority situation or maybe just maintain it?
I think it's very important. I think it's more important for them than anyone else because priority control, as I just mentioned, going first in particular is more important for them than anyone else. The ways that I like to do that, firstly, I like to avoid going to 5 characters as much as possible. So I will often only consider 5 characters at 18 threat or above. And even at 18, I might go for something like Thor, MODOK, Red Skull, +1, 4-cost character, just so I can stay at 4 activations when my opponent is likely going to 5.
Gotcha.
And then I'm a huge fan of Follow Me. It makes it into a lot of my 8-card picks for Cabal, although I have to say, as time goes on and people innovate more and have cool ideas around how to use cards, and we get more and more cards added to the game, it gets harder and harder to keep Follow Me in. It gets really hard. But Follow Me is really, really good when you have high power generation and you want to control priority. And that's exactly what Cabal is doing. So that card is at its best in that affiliation.
Well, so as you just mentioned in the prior question, you had said that you generally don't want the game going past round 4. And so having a card like Follow Me that allows you, let's say you have priority on round 2, and then MODOK gets to outright daze someone at the start of round 2, and then you utilize Follow Me so that you don't lose priority and you have it in round 3. That's like, those are the two biggest turns for you, right? Like that's 2 yes. out of 3 of potentially the most damaging turns where you're able to maintain priority. And that's huge, because if you don't have that, then maybe that big character that you just dazed now gets to activate with that like huge amount of power that's on them. And I mean, that's the situation that you are trying to avoid.
Oh, absolutely. If you've controlled priority all the way through turn 2 and turn 3, then what you're probably doing is you're probably hoping that by that point you've secured the win. You're close enough to winning that it doesn't really matter. And maintaining priority control for 2 turns in a row is also massive, because 2 turns is what you need to daze a character, then KO them, right? So if I have priority on turn 2 and turn 3, then I have a really good shot of dazing and KOing that character before they activate. And you could definitely create situations where a high priority target makes no attacks in the game, because the first thing that happens on turn 2 is they get dazed, and the first thing that happens on turn 3 is they get KO'd. And that kind of play is very typical with Cabal, and it's one of those things that you're trying to engineer to get the win.
Makes sense. So kind of a sub-question on this one. Is there ever a situation where you have found that having your opponent having priority is so important to them that you want to deprive them of that? Like, I think Wakanda in general doesn't want priority. So like usually in a Wakanda versus Cabal game, both sides are happy, where like Cabal's like, I want to go first, and Wakanda's like, I want to go last. Is there ever been a point where you specifically don't want them to have that last play, so you don't want priority, or does it still stick with the Cabal game plan?
I think I pretty much always feel like it's worth having priority, even if it means like my characters are going to get pushed away, for example. Usually that's fine. One thing I would say, though, is there's certain crises, and in particular, the Securas that kind of lead your team to be split into two sides of the table. Infinity Formula is the primary culprit of this, but also it can happen on extremist consoles. Mm-hmm. You often get a situation where you have like two mini games, right? Your team splits in half. One side runs up one side of the table. The other runs up the other. And when that happens, you kind of have like two games of MCP happening at once. And in those situations, having priority matters less, because one player is going to have priority on one side and one player is going to have priority on the other. And especially in turn two and three, which is where you're trying to win the game as Cabal, like those sides probably aren't decided yet, right? There's probably all to play for on both, and having priority on one will probably swing it in your favor, and you can't have priority on both in those circumstances. So it can be that on those crises, having priority is a bit less important just because of the way they play out.
I had a feeling I was going to be really happy that I answered or asked you that question. But listeners, if you are not subscribing to my Patreon, there is a bonus episode where we specifically talk about team formations and the sort of thing that Pat was just going into there. And so if that's something you haven't thought as much about, I would highly recommend listening to the team formations episode, because recognizing when you're going to have that split team and how it impacts your plan is really important. But Pat, I think that was an absolutely fantastic point to make, and I hadn't actually considered that myself, thinking, oh yeah, I suppose both sides do kind of have priority in that case.
Yeah.
And so maybe in that sort of situation, when you have priority and you're figuring out which side to target, you want to be thinking about which character do they want to activate last? Like, what is their play, like their secure play that, like, you know, maybe it's Shuri or something. You're like, maybe I use priority to take out and daze Shuri so Shuri cannot activate last, as opposed to trying to go, well, they have two characters that both want to activate first, you know, that sort of thing. You know, they're going to get one or the other anyway.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Very, very interesting food for thought there.
Before we move on about controlling priority.
Go for it.
Which is, although with Cabal you really want to control priority, if you're doing well, at some point, that's going to stop happening. Because your plan is to daze and KO characters. And ideally you're doing it before they activate, to deny them their activations, right? And if you're doing that well, your opponent is going to fall below the activation count that you are, right? If you have a good turn, you're probably giving up priority. And then this is compounded by your tactics cards, right? Cosmic Invigoration gives you another activation. And a minor point, but Age of Ultron kind of does the same thing, gives him another activation. So if you're playing your tactics cards, especially Cosmic Invigoration, that's another way that you can give yourself more activations. And what I find with Cabal is you want to control priority, but at some point you just have to let it go. And you have to accept, okay, I'm losing priority next turn, but you want to try to make that turn as effective as possible and get so far ahead that even when your opponent starts the next turn with momentum, they can't do enough to you to get back into the game.
I 100% agree. That is kind of the reality of Cabal.
Yeah, and I really like Cosmic Invigoration for that, because I won't usually play Cosmic Invigoration on many turns if it will mean giving up priority, right? If I'm one activation ahead of my opponent, I'm not going to play Cosmic Invigoration to get a new activation but fall behind, because functionally that's a very similar effect, right? Rather than having that last activation on the turn, I could just have the first activation of the next turn. And in an I-go-you-go system, it's so close together, it's not worth spending the card and the power.
I think this is a really important question for players to be asking themselves when they're facing Cabal, because a lot of times, as you said, Cabal characters are a little bit more squishy. And so you have to be thinking about, if you then go for a play and like daze Zemo and Zemo hasn't activated, you can put the Cabal player into a situation where you're like, cool, now I'm comfortable playing Cosmic Invigoration.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I like Cosmic Invigoration for two situations. I like it for the turn where you know you're losing priority anyway, but you need to have as big a turn as possible, be as effective as possible, so that your opponent can't use priority to swing back into the game. And that's when using Cosmic Invigoration towards the end of the round can be like the final nail in the coffin, right? You look at the game state and you're like, cool, I'm ahead, I'm doing really well, but my opponent's going to have priority. All right, I'll reactivate this key character, I'll daze another of their characters, I'll get another victory point, and now it's going to just be too much for them to deal with their first activation.
Yeah, you've got two characters that are close to being KO'd and both have a ton of power and they can't activate both of them. So you get your choice next turn. Like, I'm gonna KO one of them, but you get to decide which one.
Exactly. It's kind of like a similar situation, as we mentioned, with the crises, where it doesn't matter as much who goes first because the outcome is going to be similar either way. And then the other time that I like Cosmic Invigoration is if the game plan isn't working and I'm falling behind. Right, like you said, if I'm the guy that's getting my characters dazed and KO'd early, it's a huge problem. But Cosmic Invigoration can help address that. And it acts as an opportunity where I can get extra activations without giving up the priority. And that can help me pull back into a game that I'm otherwise losing.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's go on to crisis coordination. So what we're talking about here is how does your team directly interact with the crisis? Like, which crisis are you advantaged into? Which crisis cause you problems? And so I was kind of curious, from your perspective, what are the crisis that Cabal prefers and wants to play into naturally?
I think because they're looking to play a fast game to leverage their advantage quickly, they, generally speaking, like to play games with lots of victory points available so that the game has the potential to end quickly. Now, they're not the only team that has this preference, right? And that's why I say generally speaking, because if your opponent's team wants to do that as well, then probably one of you should not be following that game plan, right? Because if it's good for both of you, it's probably better for one, and then the other person needs to recognize that and change.
That was an incredible sentence. I'm very glad that you said it. I think it's anyone who's played Magic the Gathering is probably a little bit more familiar with the concept, because either you have two control decks and you realize one of you is better at controlling the other, and so you have to realize that you now play aggro control and they are control. And I think the same thing applies in Marvel Crisis Protocol, that if both of you want to score fast, one of you can score faster, and you've got to recognize who that is.
Exactly. So I think This really depends, right, a lot on teams and tactics. But generally speaking, if I were just to summarize, I'd say Wakanda is probably the fastest team. Cabal is second.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. And as such, I think you want to have those high scoring scenarios, except for when you're facing down Wakanda, because they're the team that is likely to outrace you and is likely to score points before your dazing and KOing can swing things in your favor. If you play a longer game against them, you can reduce their activations enough that they might start out ahead, but you'll pull back around turn 3-4 to be more neutral and then start to win. But against other teams, they tend to be more survivable. They tend to have effects that favor a longer game. And those are the ones that you want to be scoring more points against. So I like extracts that have as many points available as possible. So those are usually ones with 5 or 4 points available. And I like secures that give as many points available as well. And in particular with Cabal, I really like secures that force the team to split. Just because I think the way points break down, you can have two really effective split teams. And some other affiliations can't. They end up having a strong flank and a weak flank. And I think in Cabal, you just have two strong flanks.
Yeah, I would say that's one of the biggest strengths of Cabal right now, is I feel like when you have that 17 or 19 threat team, like, Cabal just builds two really powerful, like, equally strong sides that both suck for your opponent. And I think a lot of other affiliations struggle to reach that perfect balance and not leaving one side disadvantaged. I'm curious, because you said that you like the extracts that can score 4 or 5 points, I'm just curious, is Spider Infected one that you think is good for Cabal, or is that one, because of the disadvantage of the movement, that it ends up being too risky?
So it's definitely risky. I think it's playable for Cabal. I think it's fine, but I don't think, basically, I think it is, I would happily take it, except that there's other options that are better.
Makes sense.
You know, so I think it's fine. There's certainly things about Cabal that make it bad. So, for example, the fact that they tend to have a lot of abilities that want to be within range 2, especially on Red Skull, with Cosmic Invigoration, Patch Up, Hail Hydra. And so having him have to move away from his support, from the people he's supporting, is bad. Having the spider infected characters move away often means you're losing out on attacks, which is bad for Cabal. It kind of slows the game down. Like, character, yeah, if I was to summarize it, I'd say every time your spider infested moves, you generally lose an action, and that slows the game down. And that's not what you want with Cabal. So even though it scores fast, you're just not daisy and KOing as many characters.
And you're generally running less characters overall, and so you're less likely to have some cheaper throwaway characters to just hold spider infected as well, because you generally want the really, really cost-effective, and tends to be like 4 or 5 threat characters.
Yeah, absolutely. So you tend to have your powerful characters being controlled, and you have a higher percentage of your team that is being affected in any given turn. And the other problem that it generates is you have a lot of fragile characters who you really do not want to be advancing into the teeth of the opposing team, because that can offset your priority advantage. Because if you have too many of your characters who are too exposed, then it doesn't matter if one gets to go first, because your other exposed characters are still going to get punished. I still rate it higher than the extracts where you only score a couple of points, like Skrulls. But my top three are Cosmic Cubes, Evacuation, and Worthy Hammers, my top three. And each of those is excellent for Cabal.
That makes perfect sense. None of those surprise me. So going into some of the ones that are worse for Cabal for a moment, I think you've already kind of said it, but Herbs slows down the game too much, right? Mm-hmm. You don't really want to play that long game that goes to turn 6. So it's fair to say Herbs is probably not your choice.
Correct. Although it is a great counterpick against Wakanda, especially because it also acts as a little bit of a damage buff. So it's a slow scenario where it also can help you to daze and KO characters.
Yes, absolutely. So from there, obviously we've got a couple other secures to talk about. It seems like Deadly Meteors is one that Asgard and Avengers are better at than Cabal.
Yes, I agree. And it's because you don't have a lot of resilient characters, and Deadly Meteors encourages a lot of characters to be on that center line fighting over the points. You can do it for sure, but it's not really in your favor. And if you look at the affiliated characters, there's not a good amount of high energy defense either. So you really do have to start taking out characters if you want to get the objectives. And it can just be difficult to do everything you want, especially because your team would often rather stay further away.
It does seem like in that one, Cabal will usually go down some victory points, but then need to make it up at some point after getting in key dazes or KOs. But I was curious, does your team change for Deadly Meteors? Because I feel like Cabal really wants to run like Red Skull, MODOK, and then Ultron plus like Venom or Killmonger. Mm-hmm. Maybe Ronan slots in there too at some point, but that's kind of like, it feels like the core. Maybe Ronan helps, and we'll get to that more as well, but do you start changing things up? Like, do you keep MODOK in when you see Deadly Meteors, is I think maybe the core question?
Yeah, so I think it depends a little bit on the threat level. I think Deadly Meteors is the scenario where he is the most questionable, and I do think, speaking from my own experience, I'm so high on MODOK. I love him. He has become a little bit of a crutch for me. I feel like I include him too frequently because he's in almost every list that I take to the table with Cabal, and I'm probably overusing him. But definitely, Deadly Meteors is the one where he is at his worst, and depending on how the points break down, that I think he is the first candidate to be removed in favor of another choice. You have a couple of affiliated characters that do well up close. Crossbones does, but unfortunately he's only got 2 energy defense. I think he's still defensible in Meteors, but he's not a slam dunk pick because of the energy defense.
Yeah.
I like Loki a lot. I consider Loki to be the best kind of mid-range, long-game Cabal character. He could just sit in the middle of the table and be such a pain for the opponent. And so I'm more likely to include him in Meteors, as well as different unaffiliated characters. So, for example, Hela is superb in Cabal. She's got 4 energy defense. She's decently tough. She can be a really good pick for that crisis.
I like it. So I think that kind of... Was there anything else that you wanted to get in about choosing your crisis for Cabal before we move on to the next topic?
The only thing I'd say is when it comes to secure, I think you need to decide if you prefer to play split secures or if you want to keep everyone together, because that does impact quite a lot your character selection, and it's hard to get all of the characters you want into your 10, especially if you're playing dual affiliation. If you're playing dual affiliation, you probably can't make a good Cabal list for both kinds of secures, and you probably should be planning for your other affiliation to deal with one or the other.
Do you have any overall feeling as to whether it's better to be building a solid Cabal-only roster versus, say, having a Cabal roster that has access to Asgard or Avengers to potentially do something in Deadly Meteors, for example?
I don't think any of the crises are bad enough for Cabal that you have to go into a second affiliation. I think the option is there and it's interesting, but I haven't decided yet if it's better or worse. I'm currently experimenting with the dual Asgard Cabal affiliated team, and it's been pretty good. But the more I play it, the fewer opportunities I find to actually put Asgard on the table.
And I do think that's going to be the case with... I'm personally leaning more and more towards dual affiliation rosters, which is funny because at the point when you guys asked this question on your show on Across the Bifrost, I was at the same point where you had convinced yourself that single affiliation was the way to go, literally like during the episode. Mm-hmm. And I was 100% on board with single affiliation at that point. And now I don't make a single affiliation roster. I'm finding that if I want to create as much advantage for myself as possible, I usually, in the crisis that my primary affiliation is less strong or just not quite as advantaged into, I want my second affiliation to specifically help cover those. And even if that's only like a rare situation here and there, I've been finding that I just prefer the rosters that can do that. But maybe I'll change my mind here in a month or two. Who knows?
Yeah, I still think it's up in the air. I don't think there's a clear consensus from the community. And like you said, I think we're going to keep flipping back and forth on this as time goes on.
And obviously, I'm noticing in some of these really tight matches, it still comes down, like, there are still so many very, very significant subtle plays that can drastically change a matchup. And so your ability to handle all of those subtle moments is still probably going to be more important than your affiliation. Okay, so let's move into a topic I'm really excited about. Obviously, I just released the episode not that long ago, Balance of Power. And I think Cabal is potentially the one that this topic plays into almost as apparently as possible. To a quick summary, the concept is just about a mini game going on within each game of Marvel Crisis Protocol, where you're examining how much power are you generating versus your opponent, and then who is utilizing that power in a more efficient way. And Cabal in general, like, they just generate more power than any other affiliation. Like, I don't even think it's a question. Not even Asgard with its additional per round. Like, Cabal just generates the most power. And so it is a huge question. Like, if you're getting that power and that's part of your advantage, how you use it is incredibly important.
Yes, it really is. You're right that they do just generate the most. It depends a little bit on the character, because some characters are naturally great at generating power, and others struggle. And so Red Skull, for example, is a character who is not actually very good at taking advantage of his own leadership, although luckily he has other ways of generating power. Whereas MODOK is a character that just generates ridiculous amounts of power, even outside of Cabal. So even this advantage of theirs will fluctuate a bit depending on which characters you take. But really, for me, what it comes down to is the biggest advantages that you get from Balance of Power. As I mentioned at the start with Win Condition, it's you can use more spenders, you can use more superpowers that deal damage like throws, and you can use more tactics cards, and that can help you to maintain your edge over the opponent. You can just kind of keep beating them down, keep them on the back foot. Two things that I find especially valuable. The first is being able to use spenders but still generate power. And this can be huge because it can make it much more difficult for your opponent to limit how much power you have and also to predict your turns. Because your spenders often are attacks that hit multiple targets. They're often attacks that are more likely to cause damage, so have a higher rate of return for the power generation. And the option that Cabal has frequently to chain together spenders, whereas other affiliations might have to do a power generating attack followed by a spender. Oftentimes around turn 3 and 4, Cabal can just activate a character and go spender, spender, and their output at that point spikes to be significantly higher than what other characters are doing.
Do you find that your choice to use spender attacks is directly related to KOing a character that has a bunch of power on them, where you're going, I need to make sure that this character does not get to utilize all of that power that I gave it last turn?
Yes, definitely. Because your plan is to daze and KO characters before they activate, the worst thing that can happen is you pour damage into them, give them power, and you come up just short. Because you get punished so hard for that mistake, because firstly, your objective isn't achieved. They now get to activate, and so your activations have functionally been wasted. But secondly, you've empowered them, you've given them a bunch of power, and so their retaliation against you is going to be so much higher. Just like you spoke about in your Balance of Power episode, you end up wasting your time and making your opponent better, and that is a huge cost. So I will often use a... if I need to KO a character, I will do everything I can to increase my odds, even pushing it from 90% to 92%, even a small increase on something that's already likely, because the risk is so high and the penalty is so great, I think it just has to be done. And so spenders are the main way that you do that with most characters, right? If I have a target that has one hit point left, I might still spend 4 power to use 7 dice rather than use a 5 dice attack just to increase my odds of taking them out. And the extra power generation in Cabal will just let you do that more often.
Well, I think that's actually, I was thinking about this in some practice games yesterday. I almost think one of the best situations to use a spender attack is when someone is down to 1 health or 1 stamina, right? Because mm-hmm. you're not going to be in the situation where you use the spender, blow a bunch of power, give them a ton of power, because they can't. They can only take 1 more damage. But it helps you guarantee that, get them off the table situation. And that may be kind of counterintuitive. You're like, well, I want to use a spender to deal a bunch of damage. But often, just locking in that last 1 point is so huge.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that I find a little bit with Cabal is you're more likely to make kind of pot shots with your power generating attacks than you would with other teams. I think in general, making pot shots against the opponent is not great, especially if you're doing it with low damage attacks that don't generate power, because you give your opponent power and you don't achieve very much. You're more kind of using your action and breaking even on resources, which is not really a good use of your action. But with Cabal, you get back more because you get the extra power. So those exchanges are more favorable for you. But then in addition, sometimes dice spike, right? We know this. It happens a lot in this game. You have a fairly good chance. When I say fairly good, I'm talking 10, 20% or something, that you'll get a big dice spike and do a lot more damage than you expect. And that is the point then when having enough power to use your spender is so critical, because it lets you exploit when you have those lucky dice and kind of create the targets that you're going to daze and KO. You take the pot shots, one of them gets lucky, that's the person you spend all the power to remove.
I think that's a really important thing to point out, is there are going to be spikes up and down in the dice every single game for both players. And I think a big part of it is, does your strategy and does your team composition allow you to take advantage of those spikes mm-hmm. more, greater or less than your opponent? And MODOK is a great example. Every time his dice spike high, he is going to make extreme use out of that for the rest of the game, because that spirals into giving him more rerolls or having him like move people away from the crisis. Like every time he gets a spike, his ability to make a huge use out of that is fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, he's a character that can, like, he's good no matter what, but when he gets lucky, he's just absurd. The other thing I wanted to mention here in terms of balance of power is I think Cabal, more than anyone else, needs to keep in mind the mantra that the best way to control how your opponent spends their power is to never let them spend their power, right? Daze and KO their characters so that they can't use their power. Target the characters that have the most power and take them out so that power never gets used. It's all wasted. If a character gets KO'd with 10 power, that's a huge amount of resources that have just been flushed down the drain for your opponent.
Yeah, I think if we were able to go back and look at every game, like if say that we just had these huge data banks that saved all of the information from every single one of our games, I would say if we looked back, I'd be willing to bet that a lot of the games that are won by people that have been able to spend significantly more power than their opponents were able to spend. And I would bet that if we were able to look on a curve of all of the games, I bet that would be largely true.
Yeah.
Like if you compare the winner versus the loser.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely agree.
So one thought I also had on this topic recently, Venom obviously slots into Cabal a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's a pretty common Cabal take. Maybe even like Venom may actually fit in Cabal more so than any other affiliation, you know, until we get, you know, the spider haters. Mm-hmm. But I find one of the interesting things is I think now I was looking through all of the characters. I think I'm going to hot take and say that Venom spender attack is my favorite and the best spender attack in the game. Because if you're not going to get power out of your attack, what's the next best thing to be getting? Stamina. Like to have a spender that just straight translates into still getting a fantastic resource.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on a character that obviously that benefits a great deal. It's not that expensive of a spender either. It's only 3 power. And it's on a character that people struggle to roll well against because, you know, you can't modify your dice against Venom. I just think that is such a fantastic spender for someone to be able to use where you're like, I may not be giving you power, or I may not be getting power for using this attack, and I may be giving you power, but I get health out of it. And that feels really, really good.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's because health is very closely linked to balance of power, right? Because a lot of the ways that you're using power is to remove enemy health. And so with Venom, having this option to convert your power into health means it basically lets you, it's kind of just maintaining, well, obviously it's maintaining your survivability, but what's going to happen then is you're going to power up the opposing character, they're going to hit you back, and you're going to lose your health again. But what you've essentially done is you've wasted their time, and you've negated their power, but you've got yourself further ahead. So you're even with them in terms of power in and out, but they're down on stamina now.
Exactly. And I think most of us feel like Patch Up is a perfectly valid card. I mean, most of the time in miniatures games, healing has not been a overall beneficial effect, right? In a lot of cases, most healing effects are meant to not be that great because you don't want to draw out a game so much. But in MCP, it's all tied to the victory points, not necessarily directly tied to knocking out characters. Yep. So it's okay for the healing effects to be stronger in this game. And spending one power to heal one damage is generally a solid use of that power. And so having a spender like Venom's, I don't know, it's really good in my mind, but I don't think that's a surprise to anyone.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you have any other thoughts on balance of power and how it affects Cabal?
I think we covered it. I suppose the other thing that I should just mention, although I touched on it before, it's that because Cabal has so much power, another way that it can leverage that is through team tactics cards. It can afford more expensive cards than other teams, and it can expect to play them with higher frequency. This is true in my experience, even in Worthy Hammers, where you're spending excess power to use your cards because you're holding hammers. Like, I had a play in my game yesterday with Red Skull where he spent 5 power to Cosmic Invigorate Ultron, and then he spent 4 more power for Ultron to drop him off because he was holding 3 hammers. But you can make those kind of plays because you have the power to spend, and those expensive cards are often really impactful. Right, cards like Cosmic Invigoration, Follow Me, Age of Ultron, they have some of the most powerful effects in the game because they're really expensive. But in Cabal, you can play those. And so you don't necessarily need to pigeonhole yourself into the more popular, more efficient cards because they're not necessarily the most powerful use of that team tactic slot.
I agree. So this was not an original question that I was going to have during this episode, but you kind of inspired me, and so I now think this is going to be in all of the affiliation episodes. But I'm thinking about regular mistakes that people make playing a particular affiliation. And one of them that I mean is, I think people too often forget about MODOK's Bow to the Will and Walk People Off Crisis, and forget that just because it says it can only be used once per character, it doesn't mean he can't use it on 3 different characters. And I think if I were to pick something that I think Cabal players forget about, it's that. And I would say I think Crossbones also gets overlooked just a little too often. I think his interaction with being able to use an amplifier on his strike to do 8 dice strikes is, I think, better than people give it credit for. And his ability to be the right counterplay in a lot of situations. Like, if I were to pick a couple of things that I feel like Cabal people should do this at least a little bit more. But I was wondering, do you have any thoughts where you're like, when you see or hear people talking about Cabal, where there are some things that you think people are overlooking?
Yeah, definitely there are. The first one that I think people overlook a lot is Red Skull's Master of the Cube. This is his ability to spend 3 power to move a character within range 2. I think there's 2 things that people forget about with this ability. The first, and most importantly, is Red Skull can move multiple characters, right? Just like MODOK can move multiple characters, you can only place a character with this ability once a turn, but you can place multiple different characters. And so when you get into the Cabal mid game, which is around about turn 3, 2-3, and Red Skull has generated a bit of power, you can have some very explosive, powerful scenario plays where he activates last and just moves everyone around and puts all of your characters onto objectives. And it can even be a nice way to keep your team alive, is you can keep them, in some situations, you can keep a key character off of an objective to force an opposing character to also be off that objective if they want to attack you. And that might dissuade them from attacking you. And then at the end of the round, or near enough to it, you can have Red Skull teleport that character to where they actually need to be to contest or to score. And then the other thing about Master of the Cube is when Red Skull has some power, he kind of has charge because he can cube himself forwards and make multiple attacks. And I think people forget about that. You can get some really crazy threat ranges with Master of the Cube plus Medium Advance plus Cosmic Blast or Unleash the Cube. And so if he has a lot of power, he can be incredibly flexible. And there are some situations, especially on the scenarios that give you extra power, like Infinity Formula and Cosmic Cube. But also, you sometimes have very cagey starts where you can't do too much early on. And if he can just use the Cosmic Cube multiple times to get lots of power, you can have some ridiculous endgame plays with Master of the Cube.
I think you probably made a few people's brains explode there, where suddenly people would be like, I could use this multiple times, because they get trapped in, like, because Cosmic Cube is in action, but Mastery of the Cube is not. And so I think there's going to be some people listening to this that it's going to be like, oh my God. Yeah. Kind of like that first time when you realize that you can Cosmic Invigoration and let someone activate again. Like, you know, we all had that moment where you're like, this card does what?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's going to be some people going, like, all the cogs start working and they're like, oh, I'm going to Red Skull some bitches, right?
I'm glad you mentioned Cosmic Invigoration, because I think at this point it's well known, but it's really critical for people to understand how that card works, because good use of it is so important for Cabal. I consider it a must-take card, But as you mentioned, you have to understand that you can use it and then activate. So you can ensure that you get that second activation. You don't need to leave a character kind of blowing in the wind.
Well, let me pause you there for a minute. To emphasize the point, you may play tactics cards before you decide which character to activate. That is the key thing there. And Cosmic Invigoration is not tied to Red Skull's activation. So you just remember at the start of your turn, even before you decide if you're going to pass, you could still play a tactics card. And yes. So that is the key there. So you can absolutely start your turn and go, I'm going to Cosmic Invigorate MODOK, and now I'm going to choose to activate MODOK. That also means you've got to make sure that your characters are positioned in such a way that you can play that without needing to move anyone. And that also means for your opponent, think about those throws and such. Just because you can throw MODOK into something, get one more damage, it may be more important to get him away from Red Skull.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's very important to understand how that works. It kind of works in a similar way to field dressing. And then the other thing that's important to remember with this is, and I think this is not so well known, but if you are out of activations and your opponent has a lot more, still to go, maybe because they outnumber you a lot in their team size, maybe they've dazed a character early, you've got three activations, they've got five or six, you are passing each of your turns. And so you can, on one of your turns, still play a tactics card. So, for example, maybe I've activated all my characters, and Charles, you've still got three Guardians of the Galaxy left. Yep. I can wait for you to activate two of those characters, and then I can play my Cosmic Invigoration, remove my activation token, and get an activation when you only have one character left. And maybe I can daze that character. And so I never risk that my character being vulnerable.
Yeah, you might want to do it while there's two characters left, so they still get stuck having the last activation, so you have priority.
Yeah,
All of that stuff is a subtle decision that you got to make one way or the other. All right, perfect. So let's do our final topic. The game is evolving, right? We've got new releases and stuff coming out, and I'm just curious, how does this affect both Cabal's roster construction and team construction with characters that they may want to pick, and potential opponents, and how that can change that maybe you need counters? And I throw it out, I'm like, I feel like Ronan is going to be in a lot of Cabal rosters and possibly a lot of Cabal teams, because that dude seems fantastic.
Yeah, I think he's awesome. He's also, I think, incredibly difficult to deal with. Oh, he's such a headache for Cabal, because he punishes you hard for your primary game plan of wanting to daze and KO him. So hard. I think he's excellent. Judgment works perfectly to empower the Cabal primary game plan, right? Because if your character is judged, then I can daze and KO them, they won't get power. The risk to me for failure is much less, because you don't have the power to retaliate in a meaningful way. And the reward for success is even higher, because if I daze you and you come back with only one power, then I don't necessarily have to target you as a priority to KO you. Maybe I can leave you till later and pick somebody else. So I think judgment is the main reason why Ronan is appealing to Cabal, although his whole kit is really good.
Yeah, and just being able to like throw out some shocks and stuff too, right? You're already kind of a little bit of a softer affiliation. Being able to like throw out some attacks, still generate power on it, and like make it so Thor only has five dice instead of six, right? Mm-hmm. Like all of that stuff adds up.
Yeah, I also like that his judgment is a way of deterring people from making attacks, which is more valuable when your team is squishy. Right. So he is really good standing next to someone like Killmonger, and people love to murder Killmonger, and it's understandable. They kind of have to. Right.
Yeah.
But if you have him near Killmonger, it's very likely that at some point you're going to get to put judgments out. And if you do get to activate Killmonger, he can perhaps enact his game plan and take advantage of judgment in exactly the same way I just mentioned. Right. Where you remove the repercussions for doing so.
which all plays into the balance of power. Like, if you get to make attacks on people and they are not generating power, and you've already got a whole affiliation that loves their strikes, right? MODOK, mm-hmm. Psychic Blast, you know, Killmonger's Vibranium Spear, you know, they love using their strikes. And so they're going to generate a crap ton of power. And then if your opponent then does not get any power out of that, that is so much better. And then you don't even, like, you having to KO that character at the beginning of a round becomes less important because they're already softened up and they didn't get a bunch of power out of it. So, I mean, and Ronin is a 4 energy defense character, which is super rare in mm-hmm. the Cabal plan. And so being able to kind of fix some of that deadly meteor situation that we were talking about also seems very helpful.
Yeah, he's also a 4 Mystic defense character, and Cabal is pretty good against Mystic, but it's nice to have a team that you can put together, some teams where Mystic just is not nearly as big a concern, because you have characters like MODOK, who has 3 plus his psychic shield, you have Loki, who has 4, and you have Ultron, who has 4 plus his bonus. I forget the name of the power now. Ultron, all will be metal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Hold on, all will be metal.
Yeah, and Loki has 4 plus I'm a God. So you have all these characters that have really high Mystic defense, and so having that kind of angle as well can be quite cool, because if your whole team has that, then it can be a strong counter pick against some opponent.
100% agree.
One last thing I wanted to mention about Ronan, but Ultron can drop him off. Don't forget.
Yes.
It works great with Venom, it'll work great with him.
So are there any other new releases that you think are going to have a big impact on Cabal?
Yeah, other releases. I think the Guardians in general, Guardians of the Galaxy, are really cool with Cabal, because a lot of them just have very high damage output and are very good at making attacks. Right, Rocket, Nebula, Star-Lord in particular, Gamora. Like, they're all characters that work well with the Cabal game plan. And so I think a lot of them are shoo-ins for the hotly contested unaffiliated spots. They're things you'll want to consider. And then I also really, really like 2 other packs in particular. I've really enjoyed Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight. You mentioned them earlier as 2 characters that can help you control priority. I would say it's really hard to fit them into teams because they're 2 unaffiliated slots. And it's it's a high price to pay to give up both your unaffiliated characters in a 5 character team. And 2, it's really hard to make the points work to get them in.
Cabal needs a 2 threat.
Yeah, exactly, right? Because oftentimes you don't have a 2 threat. You often want to take MODOK, who's a 5, and it just makes it super awkward. But when you can, it's really nice in some circumstances. The box that I've liked the most, though, so far is Hawkeye, Black Widow. Those 2 characters are really, really cool for Cabal.
I agree. One thing I want to say on the Guardians is I've been practicing with them a lot lately, and I think they're going to make for some really interesting matchups with Cabal, because as we've been talking about, Cabal wants to go after like their hardest hitting character and then daze or KO them like right at the start of a round. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit harder to do against Guardians, because they tend to have just a wide variety of characters, and losing any one of them isn't really that big of a deal for their plan.
Yes.
And almost any of their characters can explode damage. Mm. And so it's I think it's going to make a very interesting game, potentially one of the most fun games to watch. Like, if I had a choice to watch any affiliation versus any affiliation, I think a Cabal versus Guardians game is going to be very fun to watch. And I think it's going to be hard to predict the winner, because like MODOK is absolutely going to wreck someone, right? It doesn't matter which character it is, MODOK wrecks someone. But Star-Lord, Rocket, like Ronan, Drax, like anybody can all of a sudden daze, you know, a Cabal character out of nowhere too, with, you know, winging it. So I think it's that matchup, I think, is going to be one that if I were a Cabal player primarily, I would be like, what is my plan here? Because they're going to be not quite as good at dazing as I am, but they're going to be good enough that I've got to worry about it.
Yeah, for sure. And they will often have the character advantage, but they might even have 2 characters more than you, depending on how they're building their team. And it's really problematic. I agree. I'm starting to get a lot of respect for Guardians of the Galaxy now that all of their releases are out. I think they're really strong. They just have kind of like a numbers advantage, not just in terms of number of characters, but in terms of like the amount of dice they're rolling in the game, the amount of hit points they have on the table. And aside from that, in some ways, the amount of power they're generating just because they're making those extra attacks and they have more people powering up in the power phase. So I do think they give Cabal a run for their money, and that regard. My initial impression so far is Cabal are good at range, and Guardians are not very mobile. They don't have a lot of charge abilities. They don't have a lot of characters with long moves. They often will need to spend one of their actions to advance, and you have to play kind of a cagey plan where you're trying to outrange them and trying to make them make the first move and kind of pick off what you can. Because certainly if you just try and fight them one for one, it's going to be really tough.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. They often end up situations where you can like move Star-Lord and then deny him an attack. It's just been, I was just practicing with them with like Shuri in there, and just like one attack from Star-Lord, all of a sudden just like dazed Loki. Just one attack, because like when you've got Winging It tokens and Shuri and Plucky Ash, it was just like, yeah, I suppose the math of that happening is probably not that crazy. But yeah, they skew some of those numbers where you just have this three threat character that just more than what you're used to in the other affiliations. So I think that's one to watch out for Cabal, is like figure out what your plan is there, because I think it's just gonna play out differently than the other affiliations.
Definitely agree.
Okay, well, do you have any final thoughts either for players who want to play against Cabal or play with Cabal before we wrap up the episode?
I think we've covered a lot of stuff in good detail. I don't know. I just think they're really fun. I think they play a really cool game of just having a bunch of maniacal supervillains trying really hard to murder people. I think they're really cool villains. And I like how their mechanics play into that. I think you can have a lot of fun playing them competitively or casually.
For sure, 100% agree. And obviously, if you want some of the more basics of the affiliations, you can check out either the Across the Bifrost, Hydra, you know, I want to say Hail Hydra, but the episode for you guys is, you know, Cabal affiliation. And yep, then I have an episode also, Hail Hydra Part 1. These are the sort of episodes, if you're trying to check out the basics and just kind of get an idea of like who the right unaffiliated characters are to drag in and what are the important tactics cards, that kind of stuff we have all kind of covered already. And so go check out those, and we're not really rehashing them in this one. So it's, you know, no need to duplicate that content really. But obviously, Pat, I love Across the Bifrost, and I'm so happy that you're able to come on and help me tackle Cabal, because your input on this affiliation is beyond valuable.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun.
No problem. Well, and to all of the listeners, if you want to check out the Patreon episodes, go check them out. I've got, you know, like I said, the great one on team formations. That's one to think about a lot, but it's only $1 per episode. And if you're a fan of Across the Bifrost, I would check out their Patreon as well. I personally am a subscriber, and I listen to all of their episodes. As long as I don't miss one occasionally, I always feel bad about that. I'm like, oh, I missed out on these gems, this sweet Doctor Strange Pat knowledge.
Thanks for the shout out.
No problem. And so, listeners, go out, either play against Cabal or play with Cabal, but when you get to BOP with them, remember, Hail Hydra.